did you find this?
What?
What the fuck Craig was took that? Forever.
Hey, by the way, USA, USA, the women just scored.
Oh, shit. Ryan's watching some women's soccer.
Gotta support the women.
That's true.
It's ladies' night.
It's ladies' night.
Yeah, it's Friday. Perfect. Friday perfect. Night. Ladies' night, women's soccer, USA versus the Vietnam.
You know what's funny about that whole situation is my grandpa was in Vietnam, and then he lived in Garden Grove, which is a heavily Vietnamese area. So every single person in his life for the last like 40 years before he passed away was he had to interact with was Vietnamese.
Wow.
Was probably eating some good pho though.
Oh yeah. Oh for sure. I'm not gonna make the obvious pho joke there. So it's episode 91. We've got sports coming your way. I'm doing the Cardinals. That's gonna be a lot of fun. Ryan, who are you doing?
I'm doing Detroit.
Should we be excited?
Oh hell yeah. Detroit's gonna win the NFC North this year.
The Super Bowl runner ups.
You heard me. I said it.
Okay.
Didn't I say earlier, like in one of the podcasts from like a month or two ago, didn't I say it would be like Detroit and Jacksonville in the Super Bowl?
I think that was like in March when you said that.
Yeah. I should go like put some money on that right now because it's probably like, you know, plus 50,000.
I mean, I think you should. And then Shane, you did San Francisco.
Yeah. So, we're either going to die or we're going to fly on the programming note from our boss, Jeff Crisco. So you're welcome or I'm sorry. I don't know.
we'll figure it out. We have actually, and then like Waleed's going to listen to the Bears episode. We've got a lot of like people that are above us on the food chain, listening to us talk about their favorite teams.
I'm jumping on both grenades, dude.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know anybody that likes the Cardinals. All right. So 91, who's going first? Ryan, you got a shout out?
Sure. I got a redemption since I pissed off Tony so much last week with okay. DJ Raji.
Okay.
So I went with the Chicago Bear. All right. To even out the juju. Let's talk about Mr. Tommy Harris.
Love
famous number 91 for the Bears. He was actually born in Germany, but he was raised in Texas. I'm guessing his parents were somehow involved in the military.
It's so crazy to go from a place where small talk doesn't exist to a place where small talk's the only talk that exists.
Yeah, right. He attended the University of Oklahoma. He played for legendary coach Bob Stoops, Oklahoma Sooners football team from 01 to 03. He's one of the very few players in OU history to start every game of his true freshman season.
Damn.
Yeah. No red shirt for him.
Shit.
He's two-time All Big 12 selection and was recognized a consensus first-team All-American in 2002 and unanimous first-team All-American in 2003. He also won the Lombardi Award in 2003 as the nation's best lineman.
Yeah.
So in 2004, the Chicago Bears selected Harris in the first round, the 14th overall pick in the 2004 NFL draft. And he played for the Bears until 2010.
Yep. He was on a lot of those teams.
Yep. Yeah, so he was part of the, you know, Super Bowl team from what, 2005 or 6?
2005, yeah.
Yeah.
God, that team was so fucking good.
All right.
That team can vote.
He was very well suited for Lovie Smith's version of the Tampa 2 defense, which relies on quick mobile linemen to get pressure on the quarterback.
Shane, he was more of a like, obviously not as good as, but like an Aaron Donald type of guy where he wasn't like a large, thick guy. He was kind of more
quick. A smaller steroided out guy.
Yeah. He was big, but he was fast. That was his jump.
So after that Super Bowl season, 2007, he appeared in the Pro Bowl again. Or no, that was part of the... Why does it say 2007 was the year they went to the Super Bowl? That's not right.
It might have been the 06 season, so 2007 in calendar years.
Because it says, yeah, the Bears beat the New Orleans Saints to win the NFC Championship, and the Colts beat the Bears in the Super Bowl.
Oh, dude, that Saints game was so fucking good. Remember when Reggie Bush caught like a 90-yard pass and like waved goodbye to Brian Urlacher? And yeah. then the Bears whooped the shit out of them and they won like 33-14 or something like that. And the sideline lady was like, "That Reggie Bush, he's pretty fast, huh?" And Urlacher was like, "Not fast enough." Like, let's go.
So the year after that, he signed a contract extension with the Bears for $40 million for 4 years. It also included an $8.5 million Pro Bowl bonus, which he would receive if he made it to the Pro Bowl in 08, 09, and 2010, he could have.
For being a Pro, that's bullshit.
It's 2010. Come on.
2010.
Sorry, 2010.
Odd X.
He could have made an additional $2 million based on performance. It also included $17 million in guarantees and made Harris the highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL. For that year, at least.
Yep.
And Ndamukong Suh, the year later, surpassed that with his contract.
But he was good enough to be the guy that reset the scale. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Christian Kirk.
Oh, God. Right? Every wide receiver now is thanking his lucky stars.
Then his career started to go down the hill. In fact, former defensive tackle Warren Sapp even criticized Harris in 2010, comparing him to a blind dog in a meat house. That year he only had one sack in Week 17 against the Packers.
And that 2010, that was a good team. That team is the team that made it to the NFC Championship where Jay Cutler got hurt.
Yeah. Needless to say, the Bears were done with him after 2010, and in 2011, he signed a one-year deal with the Colts, but was released right before the beginning of the season. And he did sign with the Chargers a month later, and that was his final season in the NFL with the Chargers.
Or the graveyard, baby.
Yep. Really, really quick note. He was the co-owner of the Texas Outlaws.
Is that arena?
This was part of a fall experimental football league along with fellow NFL alum Eric Basie. I'd never even heard of the fall experimental football league.
No.
But he has a fitness center in his hometown of Kyleen, Texas, dedicated in his name.
Hell yeah.
That's famous Chicago Bear and Super Bowl loser Tommy Harris.
Oh my God. All right. Shane, I have a list. What about you? What do you think about yours?
Mine does have a list, but it's not. No, never mind. That's my Niners. I had the wrong document open. Sorry. I can go. Mine's kind of shortish.
Bring it on.
So mine is going to be based on the 91 NFL draft, where the draft had a big controversy around two words.
Suck it.
Exactly. Remember that shit? I mean, for me, elementary school is when DX was popular, and then all the kids had to be stopped by their teacher to stop cross-chopping each other. And then someone had to ask what that meant. Anyways. So before the 91 draft, it was almost certain that not only would Notre Dame cornerback Todd Light be the first defensive back off the board, he'd also be the first defender off the board, and he was the consensus number 2 overall pick. He would also be one of the best cornerbacks in Notre Dame history and ranks in the top 10 for interceptions of all time in the NCAA. He was consensus All-American twice.
Wow.
So there was kind of two teams who needed defensive help, the Rams and the Browns during this time period. So the Rams needed secondary help as the season before drafting Light, they were bottom 5 in all metrics, so the pick made sense at pick 5, but basically, it was a no-go that it was going to happen. He wasn't going to fall.
Sure.
but he did end up on the Rams, so we'll cover that as I go forward. And he is one of four players having more than 30 interceptions on a single team.
Hell yeah.
Really?
So he wasn't like a bust.
No, he was very good.
Sure.
I usually don't cover the really good guys. I usually cover the freaks of the sport. So now you may be asking why Light ended up on the Rams when they had pick 5, when the good old clusterfuck of an organization, the Cleveland Browns, had the second overall pick.
Sure.
So to give you a little background on why the Browns were so bad to have pick number 2, I didn't know that the Browns used to be good at a point, because in my entire sports fandom, the joke has always been that they've been like the AFC North of, but the, without the Jets, you know what I mean? Like the same kind of connotation.
Yeah, but the 80s, they kicked ass.
Yeah, they went to AFC Championship 3 out of 4 years. They made the playoffs for 5 straight years, and the wheels fell off in 1990.
Yep.
So the 90s Browns ranked dead last in points given up the NFL and allowed the most touchdowns in the NFL. Their best player in the secondary was 32 years old, and their starting cornerbacks were 31 and 36. So it was time to send them out to pasture and get them to sign up for AARP.
Ew.
Damn.
So Todd Light fit the mold perfectly here, as he would help the depleted secondary, as he was very agile and kind of a ball hawk, which is what they needed. So in 1990, number one overall pick, or consensus number one overall pick, Rocket Ismail, went to the CFL, and the media only really cared about Light going as the next pick. So the actual pick overall number one didn't matter at that point. Many GMs, including the Giants GM, claimed that they wouldn't be lucky enough to grab Light, as even though he'd be a tremendous asset to their team. So during a normal kind of press interview, Light was asked where he would like to play ball, and he answered, he gave the stock answer, "I'd like to play anywhere, even Cleveland."
Oh no.
So some real fucking boomers got this two word qualifier from his sentence as a firebomb to their grandma's house, and we're just like, this guy's done, we don't want anything to do with him. Especially Browns general manager Art Modell, who got his undies in a bunch and took it as a slight against himself, the org, and the city of Cleveland. He stated, "None of us have to defend the quality of life in Cleveland. 47 of our players live here in the off season, and this idea of going to a vast wasteland is not fair to the great people of Cleveland." And as someone who's been to Cleveland in their life, Art Modell is a liar. Cleveland sucks.
I've had a good time in Cleveland, but that's because I was like on tour there. And you're going to be hanging out with cool people doing cool things. You know what I mean? Like, I got to see the cool parts of the city. Shout out to No Class.
I'm from Southern California, though. So, like, I'm very spoiled in what we can do here. We're like, we did everything in 4 days on our trip there. So I was like, it was cool to go to the Hall of Fames, both Hall of Fames. Like, we didn't go to any football or basketball games. We went to an Indians game. But I was just like, this is fine, whatever. Anyways, so the Browns passed on Light, and the Rams looked into him at 5 to a detriment of his bank account, which he would lose millions of dollars falling to 5 and being the third defender chosen, as we kind of see that happens with previous people or controversies of what we see now in regards to player holdouts, pay the running backs.
Yep.
Now you might think this is the controversy, but it's actually not. The actual controversy is that Todd Light never actually said that statement. Even Cleveland. So he stated, "I'd like to play anywhere." Then the reporter asked, "Even Cleveland?" And Light replied, "Yes." So it's either bad journalism not knowing where to put the quotations on this statement, or it's an editorial hit piece to put on Light to make him look bad and stir the pot when draft drama came up.
Man, I fucking hate the way that these kids get fucking scrutinized and overanalyzed, and it's just fucked up.
Yeah, you cost this kid like $4 million just because someone was like, whatever, dude, doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, wow.
So Art Modell became even more of a piss baby going after ESPN after they wrote that he took them off, that he took Light off their board. And he said that never happened. That wasn't something that he did, but it is true. He obviously stated that he did take Light off the board. And after reading the comment, the old man got mad about a kid's comment being taken out of context, and then got mad when his actions had to be articulated correctly, but he didn't want to accept responsibility for what he did.
Right. Classic.
Yes, typical old man. So then he went after ESPN's writer Edelstein, where he said he never gets anything right, he was born wrong, and he'll never ever have relevancy in reporting. So he went full scorched earth on ESPN, like his the entire reputation, what's going on. So the Browns would then draft Eric Turner instead, who would pan out to be a very good player for the Browns as a defender and be critical in helping the Browns get back to the playoffs. Both picks paid off, fortunately, and it's argued that Turner would have had a better career long term if he didn't tragically pass away from stomach cancer at the age of 31.
Ooh, yeah. Wow.
So I know I did end on a bad note, but like it, this story cumulatively has a good, it could have been so much worse.
Yeah. And like when I was under the impression that he actually said that, for a minute, I was like, bro, how are you going to say something that makes me agree with Art Modell? Like, fuck, man. But of course it wasn't real. That's bullshit. Nothing will ever be worse than Art Modell. He's the Henry Kissinger of sports owners. All right. So I have a list today, gentlemen. And this list, it's not like about failure per se. But it kind of is. So instead of remembering a bunch of individual dudes, we're going to talk about some individual plays. Sometimes I'll, the way that I search stuff is sometimes I'll do like, and I'm going to pull back the curtains a little bit here, like, I don't know, 91 yard interception return or 91 yard touchdown run to try to find something a bit more unique. Yeah. And so today I'm just going to throw a bunch of them together because this is our show and we can make the rules, right? So when I was doing that search, I found a play from 2021 where Quez Watkins caught a 91 yard pass. It's nice. Pretty sick, right? So I bring this up for two reasons. One, Quez Watkins did not score on that play.
Dude, what? That's unfortunate.
And two, the Eagles ended up not getting any points on that drive because they were stopped on fourth and goal. So I decided to take a little trip, fell into a rabbit hole, and now I present to you, my friends, some of the longest and coolest plays in NFL history that did not result in a touchdown.
Okay.
All right. The longest play in NFL history that was not a touchdown is actually a three-way tie at 104 yards.
Excellent.
And that is a kickoff return by Percy Harvin, a kickoff return by Amir Abdullah, an interception return by Marcus May. So three plays that are 104 yards that did not score.
Damn, Percy Harvin.
Right?
Yeah.
So the longest rush that was not a touchdown was a 90-yard run by a guy named Johnny Johnson.
Nice. Uh-huh.
Isn't that I saw it on Twitter, the athletic director for the Giants who's like 108 years old.
Yeah, right? I don't want to, that guy should not be stretching anybody. So, however, this is disputed because a guy named Hap Moran, who played for the Giants in 1930, has a run of 91 yards that didn't score that was recognized in the New York Giants organization, but other sources have it listed as 84 yards. And there's like a New York Times article from 1930 that backs up the claim that it was 84. But the Giants, according to the Giants, they have the longest rush that did not result in a touchdown.
Is this like a fish story of like, hey, it was this big?
Yeah, something like that. He ran that far and he beat the Krauts.
Listen, it's fake news, all right?
It is. All right, so this is going to blow your mind. The longest pass play that did not score in NFL history is 98 yards.
Wow.
And the pass was thrown to Ahmad Rashad.
Yes.
All right, Ahmad Rashad. Shane, are you familiar with Ahmad Rashad?
No, but that's a tight-ass name.
So he used to host NBA Inside Stuff. It was like a cable basketball show. Like, he still works for the Knicks. He's always been in NBA circles. And
I do know him. Yes, I do know him.
I think he's more known for his sportscasting career, I think.
Right. And so he does have the record for longest non-touchdown pass reception. Now, on that play, I'm watching it, and his name was Bobby Moore, which confused me. So I looked it up, and in 1972, he converted to Islam and changed his name from Bobby Moore to Ahmad Rashad. All right?
Okay. Cooler name.
So, yeah, way better. So, however, this play that I'm talking about happened on December 10th, 1972. So that's a really tight window because the announcer calls him Bobby Moore. So I'm not implying that he converted to Islam because he was tackled at the 1 yard line, but the timeline certainly fits, right?
Yeah, inshallah, right. Get me into the end zone.
So, the rest of the records are Brady Keyes, 90 yard punt return, Orlando Scandrick, 86 yard blocked field goal return, and Andre Waters, 81 yard fumble return. So I have some fun ones here. Champ Bailey had a 100 yard interception return where the ball was knocked out of his hands at the 1 yard line and went out of bounds through the back of the end zone. So possession was given back to New England because okay. It's a touchback. It's a super famous play because New England tight end Ben Watson like hustles from across the field to knock this ball out. And he also, Ben Watson, did that and tackled a fumble return from Lawrence Timmons on an 89-yard return. So this dude's like the original DK Metcalf.
That rules.
Damn.
The list that I saw has Daniel Jones's 80-yard run has an asterisk next to it that simply reads, player fell down untouched.
Dude, we love Danny De Niro here, all right?
We do, we do. A couple more. Sammy Watkins caught an 84-yard pass from former Chicago Bears icon Kyle Orton and was brought down. The asterisk says Watkins started celebrating at the 15.
Wow.
Dick Gordon of the 1966 Bears had a 94-yard kickoff return where he lost a fumble at the end of the play.
Wow.
In 1975, Cleveland Browns kickoff returner Billy LaFleur had a 92-yard kickoff return, broke his leg while tackled, and never played another down of pro football.
Holy shit.
That's a tough one. Bob Neff of the Dolphins had two. He had one for 95 yards in 1968 and one for 90 yards in 1966. According to the sources I used on this, both of those returns ended in interceptions for the Dolphins offense on that drive.
Damn.
So no points were scored. So a couple were mistakes. In 2018, DJ Reed for the 49ers returned a kickoff back for a touchdown, but was penalized for a face mask while giving a defender a stiff arm.
That's bullshit, bro. Like, unless you're yanking him down, dude, like, that's like the hardest flex of like, hey, get out of my face.
Yeah, go away from me. So the penalty yardage made it a 90-yard return. The 1960s Cardinals had Willie West go 87 yards before being tripped by a teammate. last but not least, I want to talk about this, something that you guys, I would encourage you to look up on your own if you're unfamiliar. Terrence McGee's kick return for Buffalo in 2005, which I think, had he scored, would have been considered the greatest kick return of all time. He gets the kickoff, starts right, cuts all the way across the field, makes like six guys miss up against the sidelines, goes back to the right side of the field. He's got a giant convoy of dudes. There's like eight dudes, and there's one defender who tries to go low to cause a pileup, and McGee jumps too early, trips over the defender who's already on the ground, goes down inside the five just as the clock for the first half expires, and Buffalo gets no points.
Yeah,
that's one of my all-time favorite plays that wasn't like negated by a penalty and like really mattered for nothing. So that is my list of the longest NFL plays that did not result in a touchdown, and my 91.
Nice.
You always come with the heat, Tony. I like it.
You got to see what we got in store coming up, y'all. I got some crazy ass shit.
All right. So we're gonna get jiggy with it tonight. Na 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 na.
Hell yeah.
We're gonna go Big Willie style. We're gonna talk about a famous defensive end for the Saints, Mr. Will Smith.
Let's go.
All right. It's kind of a sad story, just to prepare you.
Whoops.
All right. So we can talk a little bit about his playing career, but his ultimate death is the main story of this story about him. Born in 1981 in Queens, New York. Yeah, he played prep football and was the best defensive line prospect in the state. He had 20 sacks in his senior year of high school.
High school offenses in the early 90s did not pass the football.
Yeah.
Dude, I showed somebody Derrick Henry stats from high school, and they're like, is this legal? And I was like, it shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
He was a four-year letterman at Ohio State. and helped the Buckeyes win the 2002 National Championship, where he was named the first team All-American. The year after that, he was selected as the 18th pick overall in the 2004 NFL Draft by the New Orleans Saints.
Damn, did he play his whole career there?
I believe so.
Shit.
Company. Sorry.
Or no, never mind. Never mind. He played one final year with the Patriots, but yeah, okay. Basically sure. All with the Saints. Really good rookie season. 30 tackles, 7.5 sacks. The following year, he had 48 tackles and 8.5 sacks, and played well enough that the Saints did not re-sign other defensive end Darren Howard, thus making Smith the starter opposite Charles Grant for the 2006 season. He then slowly established himself as one of the premier defensive ends in the NFL. In his first season as a starter, Smith became the leader of the defensive line and emerged as one of the NFL's best defensive ends. He was voted to the Pro Bowl and finished tied for 14th in the NFL with the career-best 10.5 sacks. He played in 14 games that year and sat out the last game because they made the playoffs.
Oh, sure, sure. He rested.
Yeah. In 2008, he was one of six players suspended for the use of bumetanide. It's a diuretic, which can be used as a masking agent for steroid use.
Fuck yeah. Go off, kid.
It is believed the diuretic was found in StarCaps, a weight loss supplement that he had been taking. His original punishment was announced as a four-game suspension, covering the final four games of that season. Enforcement of that suspension was obviously delayed as other players challenged the decision through federal and state courts, and the league allowed all players involved in the matter to continue playing pending a final resolution of the case. His suspension was later reduced to two games and additional two lost paychecks, and was served at the beginning of the 2011 season. So this is 3 years after this happened with those six players.
That's so smart, dude. Just put it in court. We're going to play until our careers are over anyways.
Right.
Yep.
For the 2013 season, he was slated to move to the outside linebacker position because they changed to a 3-4 defense favored by the Saints' new defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan. However, he suffered a knee injury and torn ACL in the Saints' third preseason game against the Texans.
What the fuck do you have Will Smith doing in the third preseason?
Right?
Jesus.
Right.
Is that Brandon Staley shit?
Yeah, and sadly enough, because of that injury, the Saints released him, and he signed with the Patriots and was released during the preseason.
Damn it.
So 2 years after he was basically forced out of the NFL, on April 9th, 2016, he was involved in a traffic collision with a Hummer driven by then 28-year-old Cardell Hayes. He rear-ended Smith's Mercedes SUV in an ongoing confrontation that allegedly started with Smith's vehicle accidentally rear-ending the Hummer. The final collision caused Hayes' vehicle to collide with the vehicle in front of him and was hard enough to break the rear window of the Mercedes. Moments earlier, and less than two blocks away in the Lower Garden District of New Orleans, Hayes' vehicle had been hit by Smith's vehicle. Smith's vehicle contained Smith, his wife Raquel, and two unnamed passengers. In the second collision, Smith and Hayes exchanged words when Hayes fired a handgun, killing Smith and injuring his wife. Oof. Hayes was immediately arrested at the scene. During the investigation, a fully loaded 9mm handgun was found in Smith's car. Hayes and a passenger in his vehicle claimed self-defense. After an investigation, the New Orleans PD charged Hayes with second-degree murder. Results of the post-mortem toxicology report concluded that Smith actually had a blood alcohol content of 0.235 on the night of this incident.
He was driving with his wife. Did you say he was driving with his kids too?
No. Two unnamed passengers, but yes, his wife as well. And he had three times the legal limit.
Shit. I mean, obviously it doesn't make it okay to kill somebody, but like, that's crazy. You hear it and you're like, like, oh, it's so sad. Yeah. Like, and then it's, and like,
you, there's context.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, and I'm sure, and I'm sure the alcohol, you know, only made the entire incident. It fueled the entire incident, obviously. And obviously Hayes never fired the gun, or sorry, Smith never fired the gun. Hayes was the ultimate one that fired the gun, but I'm sure Smith was talking a bunch of shit.
If I'm blowing 0.23, holy shit. Yeah.
And he's a lineman, right? Like, I don't want to say it's justified, but I'd be pretty scared. I wouldn't shoot the guy, but I'd be like, I'm driving the other way. Just,
well,
I'm,
and
making,
it's,
a right, getting, I'm making a right, getting off the freeway.
I'm guessing that the shot was while both of them were in the car. So I'm imagining that Hayes, because it said the bullet injured his wife too. So I'm imagining he probably came up to the driver's side window and ultimately fired the bullet from there, killing Smith, and somehow the bullet going through maybe his neck or something into his wife. I don't know. His wife was injured too.
You're not terminally online like Tony and I are, but did you ever see that video within the last 3 months of that guy who just closed his eyes in Florida and just shot out his window?
No.
I think that's the circumstance that happened. I'll link it to you later. But yeah, there was a guy who got an altercation who got off because it was self-defense in his vehicle in Florida. But he just blindly fired his firearm in traffic. Like, he literally closed his eyes and just shot.
Like, holy into shit. His windshield.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Self-defense.
So the trial for Hayes began later that year in 2016. In New Orleans. On December 11th, a New Orleans parish jury found Cardale Hayes guilty of manslaughter in the shooting of Will Smith and attempted manslaughter of his wife, Raquel Smith. On April 20th, 2017, Hayes was sentenced to 25 years in prison for the charge of manslaughter and 15 years for the charge of attempted manslaughter to be served concurrently.
See, you're saying that you thought that maybe the bullet hit her. If he's getting charged with attempted manslaughter on her, he shot her too.
So it's probably, yeah, it's multiple shots. Son.
Shot them both.
Right.
We are a true crime podcast.
Yeah. And the judge denied Hayes' motion for a new trial. 3 years to the day after Hayes was sentenced, however, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down the Ramos versus Louisiana ruling, which declared that non-unanimous criminal convictions violate the 6th and 14th Amendments. Because Hayes had not exhausted his appeals, he was directly impacted by the Ramos decision, and the decision denying a new trial was reversed in 2020. On January 11th of 2021, the Supreme Court vacated Hayes' conviction pending a new trial.
What?
Because Hayes was initially convicted on manslaughter, he cannot face charges greater than manslaughter in the new retrial. And that's continuing to this day. It's still not over.
Holy shit.
That is the crazy death story of Big Willie style Will Smith.
way to lighten the mood, right?
Yeah. I had to bring it back a little bit.
I'm going to try to figure out a way to make the Arizona Cardinals less depressing than that. I'm glad you set the bar low. So we'll be right back. And
it was, yeah, it was just a crazy story and I felt like it needed some attention.
I didn't know all the stuff about the conviction getting, stayed. Like, that's crazy. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That was a much more interesting Will Smith in the last 5 years of the real Will Smith that we've been getting. So I'd much rather hear that story than the dude who's a Scientologist and cries on TV.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Actually, I do have one quick Will Smith, the entertainer story before we go to commercial. I know a guy that used to do like warehouse inventory throughout the American Southwest. And at one place, he stumbled upon a pallet of CDs for Jada Pinkett Smith's metal band Wicked Wisdom, and he asked the warehouse manager, like, what the fuck is up with this? And he was like, yeah, Will Smith bought all those so that his wife's CD album would go gold or whatever. And
oh my god,
he pays us to store them here. So
that's awesome.
That's my Will Smith story. And so we're gonna come back with Arizona and less Will Smith stories, and goodbye.
Damn, son, where'd you find this? I crave
beautiful. We're back.
We're going to the Southwest today.
Yeah, we're going to the place where there are pallets of Wicked Wisdom CDs just sitting around. And we're going to talk about what's up.
And also the place that just recorded the hottest month ever in the United States. They had like 30 consecutive days of over 100 degrees in Phoenix.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I had someone who I know is in Phoenix who has tried to convince me multiple times that Phoenix is nice. And I'm like, no, it's an abomination to man's arrogance.
Yeah.
I want you to live in that kind of desert.
So get this. So I have a guy at work whose niece just got a news anchor job in Phoenix. And he put on she was doing a story, for that. Sure. NBC News, whatever, Phoenix that night, right? And it was about seasonal affectiveness disorder for people in Phoenix because they're inside all the time because it's so fucking hot out. And it's basically the reverse of like what people have in Chicago and during the winter because we don't go outside. But it's for hot. I was like, just don't live in Phoenix.
Well, my dad lives in Scottsdale. And he said the issue is that when he moved out there, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, like, it was a desert. And now so many people have relocated to Arizona from other places that they want trees. So they keep planting trees. And now the whole climate's got humidity when it didn't have it before.
Sure, sure.
So it's worse than it used to be.
And you shouldn't be planting trees in the desert. And this is why they have all the fucking water problems out there.
Listen, as someone who lives in California, every time I see a palm tree, I want to cut that shit down.
Yeah, not real.
Fuck grass. This is now a climate change podcast.
Right? That's right. Okay, so...
Geography.
So, Hollywood Brown or... Oh, wait. Okay, hang on. So let's back it up. Let's back it up. This is better than what we're going to talk about. So, let it ride. Arizona Cardinals, I think, are the Jimmy Buffett of the NFL. They're a joke, and they've always been a joke. So I want them to be good. I think their uniforms are cool, and since they don't have any real fans, I think it's funny when they're successful. So let's look at what changed as a team. Jonathan Gannon's the new head coach. He's off to a great start. He was the defensive coordinator for Philadelphia. And in case you guys forgot, the NFL and the league were super mad that the Cardinals and Gannon talked while he was still coaching. And people think that he sucked in the Super Bowl because he had already checked out and had taken the Arizona job. So the teams had to swap draft picks in the third round of the 2023 draft due to some tampering.
Well, Super Bowl is in Phoenix too, right?
What's that?
The Super Bowl is in Phoenix too, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Dude, Illuminati. It's all connected.
There it is. There it is. So Gannon's a defensive-minded coach, so I don't think he's the guy that's bringing the offensive scheme in. This goes instead to Drew Petzing, who has never been a play caller before. So
where was he before?
So he was a position coach, a wide receiver coach for Justin Jefferson in Minnesota. He was a quarterbacks coach for Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. He was also a tight ends coach in Cleveland. So we have no idea what kind of scheme he's going to be running.
I'm going to go on a limb and say stinky.
So, well, I will say this. One thing we know for sure is that the old stinky offensive scheme, the air raid of Cliff Kingsbury, is fucking gone. Thank God.
It's like it's like that white flavor of Airheads, the mystery flavor.
But it's always the worst flavor possible. This year, we know, I don't even know what we're going to see, but I know that we're not going to see fucking four wides constantly and maybe some sort of balance. Like, they passed at the sixth highest rate in the league last year, and we can all agree that there's no way that they pass at that rate this year. We can hope for positive injury regression. So Hollywood Brown, Zach Ertz. Do you know that Hollywood, DeAndre Hopkins, and Zach Ertz didn't play a single game together last year?
For real?
Yep.
NFC Chargers right there.
So let's talk Kyler Murray, who, depending on who you ask, is either ahead of or behind schedule on rehab.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is he projected to start the season?
No. I don't think so. So I've seen some people say he's looking like he'll be back in week one. Some people say he'll start the season on the PUP list, and some say he might not be back until like the middle end point of the season. So my question is really, why rush him back if the roster's a fucking joke? If a typical ACL tear takes you out for 8 to 9 months, he got hurt in December, had surgery in January. Why rush him back? There's no point.
So December, that was like early December, right? So,
but it's surgery in January. So say that's 8 months.
So we're talking, yeah, September's 9 months. So,
and you're going to put him back in on his first, as soon as he can start taking reps, he's good to go. Bring him in for this team.
Obviously he's not going to do pretty much anything in training camp. He's just going to be sitting around.
Correct.
But what are you playing for? Right.
Nothing.
That's true too. Who's the backup?
We have Colt McCoy, Clayton Tune, Jeff Driscoll, and David Blau are all there.
Okay, so McCoy's not that bad, but
he was hurt too, though. I think he had like a rotator cuff injury or something.
Yeah, who knows? Since, like I said, why rush him back? Arizona could be picking in the top five next year, as could Houston, who gave their first up next year to Arizona in the trade. So if it's Caleb time in Arizona, I think Murray would do well somewhere else, right?
Atlanta.
I would love to see Atlanta.
Oh, shit. Hot take right there.
Dude, we missed out on Lamar. We can go back, okay?
wait. I know you're gonna cover this, or I don't know you're gonna cover this, but Shane, what do you think about Kyler Murray in San Francisco?
I think Kyle Shanahan will get him killed again.
Yeah, that's probably true.
they don't have the money.
So he had the ACL tear. It was also a meniscus tear. He was not playing well before the injury, but I also believe, kind of like Josh McDaniels, I think Cliff Kingsbury is the special type of idiot that brings down the quality of his players. If he plays this year, I think a stronger scheme will hurt his pass volume, but will increase his efficiency. We can't really project Kyler right now because we don't know what his status is going to be, but I don't know. I'm not drafting him in redraft because I don't know if he's going to play this year.
Yeah. Well, and we're definitely not, I'm never drafting him ever again.
don't play Colt McCoy. In the 8 games he's played in the last 2 years, he averages 20 of 29 for 190 yards, 0.5 touchdowns, and 0.5 interceptions.
Those are Kenny Pickett numbers right there.
I'm saying no thanks. All right, let's talk about who benefits when Kyler Murray isn't in the lineup. James Conner, you heard of him?
Yeah, it's going to be the James Conner show.
Every single stat goes up for Conner when Kyler is out, from touches to yards to targets to touchdowns. This, even with a new offensive coordinator, I think bodes well for James Conner as a major bounce back candidate. He was actually in 13 games, he was 10th last year in fantasy points per game.
It wasn't bad. Are you saying that you would consider probably the only player from Arizona you'd be in redrafts would be James Conner?
Oh, we'll talk. I got some stuff. That's a good question, but the short answer is no. The long answer is okay. Yes. So he didn't even have 800 yards rushing. But
he didn't?
No, he had 3 catches a game.
Okay. Wow.
He was 6th in snap share, 8th in opportunity share. So I think he's going to lower, his dump off rates are going to get lowered, but he had like 9.6%, like almost 10% of his targets were screens. You want to bump that up, right? And sure. The offensive line is going to take what they hope is a step forward this offseason. They drafted Paris Henderson Jr. from Ohio State in the first round, like top 10, which is excellent. He's filling in their highest area of need this year at left guard. The team signed Cleveland backup Yalda Froholt to be the Danish man who plays center.
Oh, a Dane, huh?
Uh-huh. He's a plus run blocker, and the hope is he can provide some help. Plus, if he blows a block, Cardinals announcers can say that something's rotten in the state of Denmark.
Is he a former, like, soccer player that converted to football?
No, he's just a giant man.
Okay.
Like Hamlet stabbing Polonius through the curtains, the Cardinals running off left guard last year was a dagger through the center mass, so anything will be better than what was there before.
That is the nerdiest thing I've ever heard you say, and we talk data every week.
Thanks. Hey, man.
Hamlet, it was good.
Thank you. Hamlet fucks. I will always give it up for Hamlet. So my offensive line sources have Arizona ranked 31st, 22nd, and 25th. So they're not like good, but only one of the three places I looked thought they were bad. This team is not going to compete, but there's a possibility here that the run game is improved simply because Cliff Kingsbury isn't there. They started 13 different guys on their offensive line last year and had 10 different setups.
I think we're learning that addition by subtraction is like the way to play the NFL in the last like 3 weeks.
Yes. A bad coach fucks everything up. I love Connor this year, and I think the discount only exists because he's never played a full season. If I get 13 games out of him as a top 10 running back in points per game, that's a great fucking deal, right?
What is he, sixth round?
Yeah, early fifth right now. Okay. Are you kidding me? Hell yeah. No Eno Benjamin, which is sad to say, and and no Kyler opens up 30 red zone carries, 10 of which came inside the five. So there's a Jamal Williams level of goal line work available for Connor if this team can figure out a way to get into the red zone. Not a guarantee. He's reliably top 15 in most of his pass game metrics, including team target share, catch rate, receiving yards per game, yards after the catch per reception. It's everywhere. Like I said at the beginning, we don't know about what this offensive coordinator looks like as a play caller, but he was in Minnesota while Dalvin Cook rushed for over 1,000 yards. In Cleveland, Nick Chubb also hit 1,000 yards, so like he's been around successful running backs. This says to me he will look to use James Conner often. So
let your guy do the thing.
So James Conner is running back 22 on 4-for-4 the last time I checked, criminally low. James Conner or Rashad White?
Dude, they're having a mid off.
There it is.
I'm going to go with James Conner in hopes that he stays healthy and just pretty much is running that entire offense.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And like we're betting on who scores 10 touchdowns total. And I think Rashad White's skill set is more pass catcher, and they don't have Brady checking it down to him 900 times in the season.
Sure. James Conner or Jahmyr Gibbs?
Ooh, I'm not as high on Gibbs this year. So I'm going to go James Conner.
I know you guys are both in the camp that he's drafting at a ceiling, but I'm going for boom. I'm going for Jahmyr Gibbs. I'll jump on the sword.
Okay. Okay. James Conner or Damian Pierce?
Ooh. Think I'm inclined to go Pierce on this one.
Oh, spicy.
Yeah.
I'm going with the guy who catches passes, James Conner.
All right. Keontae Ingram was a late-round pick for Arizona last year. Managed 64 yards and a touchdown on 21 carries. 2.5-yard clip. Nothing I've seen from Murray, Clement, or Tyson Williams tells me they're going to be anything more than an injury replacement or spellback for Conner. Brett Coleman is like adamant that Ingram is the best fit for the run scheme that Arizona should be looking to run. So that's something to keep in your back pocket. But also, as much as I love Brett Coleman, he loves everybody.
Okay.
So we have 217 open targets on this offense after the roster's reconstructed. So the question is, who sees what? Now we're going to start with Hollywood Brown, who came in and fucking crushed last year. 64 targets in his first six games. 33 catches, 485, 3 touchdowns. So when Kyler's in, he averaged 10 targets, 6.6 catches, 70.6 yards. Without Kyler, I mean, obviously he takes a hit, but he's still got 7 targets a game with backup quarterbacks. Now he went 4 for 36, not great. But if you're telling me I'm going to have a guy out there that, with production that is gone now, has the chance to get 10 targets a game, I want that.
Yeah, 100%.
In games without DeAndre Hopkins last year, Hollywood had an extra 2 catches for almost 30 yards. He had 103 targets over 12 games last year. So if we project Hollywood without Hopkins on a 17-game pace, statistically we're looking at 140 targets.
Wow.
God damn, dude.
I mean, think about it, right? Like, without D-Hop, they funneled it to Hollywood. And D-Hop is gone. and Hollywood is still there. So
I mean, the only problem with that, though, is it's like when you're losing an elite wide receiver, quote unquote, now defenses know when and where to stack, right? Of like, yeah, hey, blitz and just cover Hollywood two people and then
yeah,
we're fine.
For sure. I think it's going to be ugly to watch, but I think there's a chance that he's just, you know, six catches for 71 yards. Like,
it's your wide receiver three, dude. Fuck it.
Right? I don't think the offense is going to score enough to put him in anywhere near like the wide receiver one, but as a ceiling play, you know, middle to higher wide receiver two, I think is absolutely on the table.
Especially in the sixth round.
So here's some of the stuff that bodes well. Brown is super successful in the short to intermediate range, which is where McCoy and Kyler throw the ball. Here's this something that caught my eye. An offense that isn't an air raid one may allow Murray and McCoy to use this crazy thing, guys. It's called play action.
What the hell is that?
What?
I don't think any Cardinals players know what it is. Even though Murray's accuracy, ADOT, quarterback rating, yards per attempt all rocket up off of the play action. Murray's ADOT was 7.2, but on play action it was 10.3.
Wow.
How is not Kyler? How is, I don't even remember his name, but he got $45 million. How is someone that stupid? Cliff Kingsbury.
Yep, he's an idiot. If it's a substantial difference, and if this stoner sitting on his couch can see it, I would sure hope an offensive coordinator could see the same thing. McCoy's ADOT also goes up about 3 yards off play action. If things fall right, Hollywood Brown is a great return on investment, and so there's a reason why I prioritize getting him in our shared dynasty draft this offseason.
He's
so
cheap.
Hollywood Brown, wide receiver 27 on 4-for-4. Ryan, can I interest you in Hollywood Brown over Christian Kirk?
No, you cannot.
I didn't think so.
I'm not taking that bait either.
All right. Hollywood Brown or Drake London?
Ooh. Well, will Kyler Murray go to the Falcons?
He won't play this year.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's
I know the Falcons
call.
Did put a conditional second out for Trey Lance to the Niners, so
that'd be sick.
That one's a really tough call. I'm probably gonna go London.
Okay.
I don't trust Hollywood with any of these backups.
Yeah, I think Atlanta's kind of gonna be sneaky good, even though I did slander Desmond Ridder for 45 minutes. I think the ceiling's higher this year.
Atlanta may not have the best record, but I think they're going to put up, you know, better fantasy numbers.
Okay. Throw them catchable passes. That's all you got to do.
Well, if we're talking shitty quarterback play, my friends, Hollywood Brown or Terry McLaurin?
Ooh, I'm going scary Terry.
Okay.
Dude, this is the James Conner question. You're really good at this, Tony. If you put me in a torture room, I'm giving all my information. I can't pick. I think I'm going Hollywood just for price of entry.
Okay. So moving on, my love for Rondale Moore last year was no secret. He was a flag plant player. The volume was going to be insane. Sure enough, the volume was insane. It was just split between him and Greg Dortch. What made them both appealing to me is how frequently the air raid asks the quarterback to look in the short and intermediate areas for crossers and drag routes. They both averaged at least 6 yards after the catch because that position just puts you in that spot. I don't want either of them in fantasy this year, not because I don't believe in the talent, but if you have two slot receivers, you don't really have one slot receiver. And if they're splitting targets, it's not worth it. They brought in Zach Pascal, who Gannon brought with him from Philly. They drafted Michael Wilson from Stanford. Pascal's a slot receiver, but the departure of AJ Green and Chosen Anderson might make that second boundary spot a competition. Pascal was getting 70 targets a year in Indy and then went to Philly and got 22. They brought him over. I mean, think about it, man. Like, Gannon's going to bring him over as a coach, right? He's the one that knows the system. He's going to teach it to the guys. Like, he's a player coach, more or less. Arizona used a top 100 pick on Michael Wilson from Stanford, so you have to believe he's going to get a chance. He would have gone higher, but as Dane Brugler pointed out in The Beast, he's missed significant chunks of time in all three of his college seasons, and in his college career, he had more drops than touchdown catches.
Yikes.
He's a contested catch specialist, but I'm not interested in anyone past Hollywood.
Okay.
This offense did not like using Zach Ertz and Trey McBride at the same time, and it shows. Ertz played the first 10 weeks of the season and ran about 80% of the team's routes. And then when he went down, McBride came in and did pretty much the same thing. Ertz, though, before he got hurt, 7 targets a game. Like, he was getting it, you know? When Ertz went down, Murray followed a couple games later, but McBride flashed some of his potential, catching a little under 4 passes a game. The issue is they have ADOTs of 8 yards and 6 yards, so 4 catches doesn't do much for you if you only get 30 yards and no touchdowns. So, right. If you're doing a tight end, like, you need either 10 targets a game, you need deeper ADOT, you need a touchdown, or nothing. Ertz was a big-time target in the red zone last year. He was top 3 in the league in targets inside the 10. But this is expecting the offense to score a lot more than it looks like it's going to do. If Ertz gets traded or cut, I think I'd be willing to look at McBride as a real cheap punt option in redraft, but I wouldn't be excited about it. These guys are back of the blob. Gentlemen, I'm only going to do this once. Zach Ertz or Cade Otton?
Oh, God.
Dude, if the tight end guy's saying that, this is bleak.
Yeah, that's like a real split because, you know, you got Baker thrown to Otton and we got who knows thrown to Ertz. But I think I'm going to go with the more experienced tight end and go with Ertz. Just because if they are starting the year with Colt McCoy or one of the backups, there's just more opportunity for these checkdowns and short passes.
Sure.
The Tampa Bay Bucs are just going to be all over the place because they have such talented wide receivers and they're going to be trying to get them the ball. And I think Otten's going to not see as much as we all hope. He's going to be a great tight end within the next few years, I hope, but I'm going with Ertz.
But what if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, if we do this episode in a year, they all hit those thresholds of getting all the way to the 1 yard line, but not scoring a touchdown. And then Cade Otton gets all the red zone looks and scores 10 touchdowns this year.
That would be freaking awesome. I would love that, but I don't think
that's my take.
I appreciate that. I've just talked more about Cade Otton
than Arizona Cardinals players
than anybody that like has, except for people that have known Cade Otton. All right, one more. Trey McBride or Taysom Hill?
Wow.
Say it's a 2 tight end league.
Dude, give me the boom. Give me Taysom Hill.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I might go Taysom. He's going to get a lot of those cheeky plays.
All right, so that's the Arizona Cardinals.
Hell yeah.
That was pretty depressing. I'm not going to lie.
I know we saved the fun ones for last. We saved the fun ones for last. So like, let's leave this one on a high note. And what's something cool? Oh, James Robinson. He's on the Giants now.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Damn. Oh Ryan. Yeah, Ryan. You're not as online as we are. The Giants signed James Robinson and Cole Beasley today.
I saw Cole Beasley. I did see that. I do check ESPN.
We should try out for the Giants.
I'm saying they're just giving shit out.
I thought didn't Barkley come out the other day and said like, if I have to sit out the whole season, I will, like something like that.
We'll see.
Yeah,
just give him money. If you're gonna give Daniel Jones $40 million, you need to be able to give Saquon Barkley $20 million.
Well, didn't the Giants like? I was listening this morning and they said that he was offered like 13, but he wants like 16. It's like, why don't just give him an extra $3 million? What the hell?
Go ahead.
And I think it wasn't a guarantee either. I think they're like, oh yeah, here's all these incentive based things and we can move the thing around where it's like, bro, you got like 2 more years with the guy. Like just get this elite play, try to win the division. Hopefully Philly falls apart and you got a shot.
Right.
This is your only window. Otherwise, you're going to be fucking mid for the next 8 years.
Yeah, outside of Washington, the NFC East is going to be killer this year. I'm excited for that division. All three of those teams have really good players.
My favorite part about Arizona is that we talked about the weather, right? We talked about Ryan's coworker.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about something completely different. So
now we're talking about the Giants.
Technically, James Conner does affect this dialogue because he did come in and fill in for Le'Veon Bell when Le'Veon Bell set out. So
true.
Right?
James Conner. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 91. Fuck this. Let's move on. We'll see you guys soon. Goodbye.
Na 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 na.